Off the Ball, GAA.
No matter what montage of clips is done down to the years, you're going to see Kilkenny instrumental and choreographing a lot of their work.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
And we say good morning to a full house. Colm, how are you?
Yeah, Jar.
Jar, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jar.
And what's going on?
All good.
So do we expect that things to be as bad for France? I mean, I don't think anybody expected it, but retrospectively, it all makes sense, does it?
I don't know if it makes sense. Did it make sense in real time? The first shot on target was the 81st minute, which was when Doué had a chance to lob Unai Simon. Unai Simon headed the ball three times in that match. That's what was anticipation. And then
he was pretty good, though.
Ousmane Dembele had two shots right at the end, like 95th minute on. He was anonymous. You know, when I was watching this game, what about you're asking the question is about a surprise. It was like, God, that guy's the Ballon d'Or. Like, he's about the 17th best player on the pitch. You know what I mean? And the thing is about Spain is outside of Lamine Yamal, like at their forward players, you would say, like they're good players, but they're not extraordinary. But then as they come together as a team, and just the substitutes off the bench. We probably collectively as a world watching this football underrated Spain a little bit, being like, that's been a very good team. And we're all talking about France. And I guess Spain used that as motivation. I don't know. They were very calm at the same time, pretty composed.
Only one team to get a result off Spain at this World Cup. Cabo Verde. Mm.
Yeah.
Pico Lopez stuff last night in a 5-1 win for Rovers, which is
huge,
unbelievably important.
Mm. And Irish side's never come from 2-0 down in the European tie.
Spain were really good though, really strong, really compact. Defensively, so solid, didn't give France a sniff. And I think that's reflected in the L'Equipe player ratings of the France players last night. So if you want to run through them, the lowest rated players got a 2.
Paris Saint-Germain's Lucas Digne, of course.
Yeah.
Off the back of a season with
an excellent season.
Ousmane Dembele.
Once his head was turned by Paris Saint-Germain, it's actually, I would say, it's Paris Saint-Germain's fault that he played so badly. Completing transfers during the middle of the tournament, bad idea. Bad juju, lads.
I don't know, it worked for Marco Correa.
Yeah, the opposite side.
He was before the tournament.
Worked for his confidence. Anthony Gordon was before the tournament.
They were both before the tournament, yeah.
But you would say for Anthony Gordon, it's so-so.
Anthony Gordon, superstar in the last game.
Ah, no, he was good.
England have anointed him as one of their star players of the tournament.
Outstanding.
We'll talk plenty about England in a second. Number two, getting two ratings, Lucas Digne, Ousmane Dembele, Michael Olise, who was pretty terrible last night.
Yeah, he got subbed off.
In many ways. Like, it wasn't as if he was anonymous. He was on the ball plenty. Didn't do much with it. Deschamps himself gets a 3. Tchouameni and Mbappe also there with a 3. Barkala were a 4. Maignan were a 4. And the highest rated players got 5. That's Jules Koundé, Adrian Rabiot and Upamecano.
Rabiot got a 5.
I thought Rabiot was...
He got hooked at half time.
Yeah.
Hooked after being booked.
It's funny, he gets a 5, but players who don't play for much longer, not rated because they... They obviously like Rabiot. You know.
Tchouameni didn't look fit.
He didn't.
Tchouameni would have been the one that was...
But they were also a man down.
If it wasn't for the yellow card.
They were a man down in central midfield, which was exactly what we'd been speaking about pre-tournament, is that like, oh, this team looks amazing, but there's a lack of balance, particularly when you play against that Spanish side who really were able to keep the ball and were Mayo-esque in their tackling. Yeah.
Just I think a symbol of the surprise, like Dani Olmo, who at the Euros 2 years ago was incredible, and then gets his big move. Because at the time, was he playing for Leipzig? Or be Leipzig at the time? I was like, yes, surprised he's not a bigger club than that. And then Barcelona come in for him. That was controversial with all their money problems. But the last season, Olmo, like he was fine for Barca. He never really got going. So I think he's a symbol of us that we're kind of slightly underrated in Spain, because he was excellent last night. Like, Pedri didn't see the start of this game with Dani Olmo dominating. And then they have like a guy like Alex Baena on the left, who in the face of it doesn't look like he does a huge amount, but is obviously very important for the balance of the side in place of Nico Williams. Just the bench, just the lads that they didn't use, like Gabby stayed on the bench and has been doing. There's someone who said it on commentary, there's not a weakness in the Spanish side. Maybe people thought the centre forward starting the tournament. Look at him. The goalkeeper as well,
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say there's not a weakness in the Spanish side. I still think going forward they look a little bit like they're not going to dominate a side going forward.
They don't need
like,
that.
Oyarzabal is a really interesting and good player. You're not going to say he's a star centre forward because he's not. That's not really his position in the first place. But he does score goals, so that's important at these tournaments. There were 19 passes.
Kilkenny Eskenda, is that what you're saying?
No. Don't drag me down to this level now, Ger. I think they're a brilliant side, but clearly they do have weaknesses. Like, it's easy to say now that they've knocked out France that they're unstoppable, but they're not. Like, yeah. Bird kept them scoreless, so they're not unstoppable.
Yeah, that was the first game of the tournament. Switzerland beat Spain in 2010, first game of the tournament, and they won that. They conceded one goal out of tournament, Spain. They've beaten Portugal, Belgium, and now France. There's not a lot of great international sides, so they're pretty much by default alone the best.
Yeah,
because they're better than Argentina and they're better than England.
I agree.
Like the whole like lack of weakness. I was saying it to last week. I was like, they don't look that great up front. You know, Lamine Yamal hasn't got going, and it's kind of true. But they're able to do that without stars.
Mm. There were 19 passes not interrupted. There were a few pot shots on the way to that second goal, but 19 passes. From back to front that France just couldn't get near it. There's a great video going around of it. Like, where they just pass it around the corner. They work their way out.
The Almo back heel assist. Was that to Yamal?
That was to Yamal.
And he squares it for Aretzabal.
Yes.
Was out for corner.
Yeah.
Like, whoever that player was, if it was Yamal, it was like a shoot first time because it's perfect angle for it, but they're going to want to square it. But De La Fuente's done this amazing thing of this, like, that will pass you to death, but will also use the width. And even, like, it probably hasn't really got going for Yamal yet, and at the same time, Luca Dean had a complete nightmare.
Well, I don't know if Shifty says he backed Spain off the back of listening to Graham last night. I heard the 10 minutes before kickoff with Graham, and he was pointing out that the last two games, the players that have been directly up against Lamine Yamal have had to go off with injury after being run somewhat ragged, even though he's not doing the scoring, so... Yeah, he certainly saw the quality of performance coming from Lamine Yamal last night, and he was amazing.
He was, yeah. I did wonder as well how France would react if they went down 1-0, because we were talking about it in the office as well, that like it's a vastly different game if either team scores first. If France score first, then we get to see Spain in a different light because we haven't seen them chasing a game, and then vice versa with France. Like, they've been in control of every game in the tournament so far. So once they went 1-0 down, I was like, now we're going to see how that stars actually work together. And I think that's kind of what we thought might have happened before the tournament. Like what happened last night. They couldn't play it together. You had four or five different guys trying to win the game for their team, and no one was getting it going.
It is a good point, actually, like, because that's the first time France went behind in the tournament yesterday. And it will be interesting to see if Argentina or England go one up against them. That could point to your... rationale that there actually are weaknesses. You could see a world where they go down 1-0 after 10 minutes and they're quite blunt in response, that they have loads of the ball, and you could possibly see that. I suppose last night was a combination of everything working for them.
Yeah,
but I just don't think there's another international side like them when they get going like that. Like France have this amazing free flow and stuff going on, but it must be very difficult to play against Spain when you can't get the ball off them. And then the big thing for me is their bench. Like, look what's coming on. Look what's coming on. Like, there'll be no fear in those lads.
Definitely felt like they had more depth coming off the bench in terms of just players that are going to come in and be absolutely fine, as opposed to France, who are trying to bring on match winners.
I thought
who are great in moments, but probably not going to overall make their play better.
They was tempted to play Pedri on the left in the absence of Nico Williams. This sort of guy who's doing the balance of the team, right? So I'm going back to that world where they do go a goal down in the final. Can you see a world where Bain is marginal, or Atzabal's working hard but not getting a sniff, Yamal's trying too hard to take lads on and getting dispossessed, and then it will go back to the midfield, then so the midfield will have to try and win the game for you. So that'll be the only thing about, like, is the tactic in the final,
get out there early
and try and score as early as possible against these boys.
Just look back at that Portugal game. You're just describing what happened in the Portugal game. That, like, Yamal was pretty, not anonymous, but not great. Trying too hard. Bayern was terrible in that game. Like, what did Spain turn to then? And eventually they got over the line. And that's sort of what I'm talking about here. I'm not saying that Spain are a bad side. They're obviously clearly a brilliant side. But there are moments where you're thinking, God, I don't know where they're going to get a goal from here.
Yeah.
They've got so much possession. They're so comfortable on the ball. They're dominating the game in terms of that aspect. But where are they going to have any breakthrough?
Like, they should have scored a lot more last night, shouldn't they?
Well, they should have.
They created a good few other chances.
You have that chance that you were talking about with the amazing interplay.
Yeah.
They did score a third.
The offside one.
Now, the offside one. But, so there is.
Yeah, yeah. But
there is a word where this was like 4-0.
Yeah. Now, but I think by the 70th minute, they had 8 shots in total and only 2 on target. So they were the goals.
Yeah.
Mike Maignan didn't have an awful lot to do in the match, funnily enough. Probably had less to do than Unai Simon, who eventually had to make 3 saves.
He had a couple of headers as well.
Yeah,
he was busy. He made some amazing reads, though. Like, there, yeah. Like, those things can't be underrated.
That true ball
like,
to Mbappe. I think he was onside. It was very marginal anyway.
That's probably why he's in the team David Raya.
I felt like everyone stopped arguing at that point, particularly.
Yeah.
I don't know what people are just not quite sleepwalking on Spain, but it's, everyone's like, yeah, Spain are very good. But who else can we look at? I think the topic of weaknesses is interesting. The only thing I can see them having a problem with is that early goal deficit, and they haven't experienced it yet. They conceded one goal all tournament. Someone has it there in the live YouTube comments, the stats of how many shots they've conceded in the last few games. It's outrageous.
Who do you think is more capable of keeping Spain out and frustrating them in that way, England or Argentina?
Keeping them out.
Because I actually don't think Argentina will care a jot of how they play in the final, whereas I'm not so sure you could say that about England. I think the English players will feel the pressure to perform and to win in a certain way. Whereas Argentina, well, they'll kick the shite out of Spain if they need to.
I don't think either team are particularly good defensively between England and Argentina. So I don't know about who would be more likely to keep them out or shut them out. I think it could end up being a bit of a shootout if Spain don't get a hold on the game.
It's mad, like we could have a repeat of the Euros final from 2 years ago. I'd fancy Spain beating England more so than Argentina.
You'd fancy?
I think Argentina are a tougher opponent for Spain.
For Spain.
Because I actually really thought about that question. Who will shut them out better? I don't know, like.
Do we not just see Argentina. The best performance from the best team in the tournament so far? Like,
probably. Yeah.
They're now clearly superior to everybody.
Yeah, but that, I guess what we're trying to establish here is who can hurt them and what will happen if they do get hurt. But yeah, like they should absolutely win this. If you go to every other nation in the world, there's like, oh, Spain are the best team.
Yeah, but it feels a little bit like football, where we saw a really high quality game. Let's wait and see what tonight's game is like. But there's two things. The advantage of having the extra day's rest is apparently very important in previous history.
I'd say they're going to bait each other tonight. Argentina, England.
Yeah, so, and also they're just not as good as the Spanish team.
Well, yeah, no, I that's fairly undeniable, is it? I don't think anyone's saying.
I think nobody can score against Spain at the moment.
Yeah, except for, Belgium, which was.
And I don't think that.
One back.
I don't know if Argentina are kind of limping over a semi-final if they get through tonight.
Feels like they have expelled a lot of energy.
Yeah.
At this point, isn't it? England are the same.
I would
though.
Say exact same. I'd say neither Argentina or England have played anyone special, and they've made it very hard work for themselves.
It's not been smooth sailing, no.
So Norway are a good side, very good side, but they're not like.
And they look wrecked.
They're not, not unbelievable. And who did Argentina last play? Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
So this is a huge step up.
There's a bit of a thinker because you kind of have to go through who's playing at the tournament, but. Somebody's bringing up in the comments about how the Arsenal players all look wrecked, look tired. Saliba pulls up last night injured. We've spoken about Saka in detail. None of the Premier League players for England have scored. It's all come from players outside of the Premier League, Harry Kane, Rashford and Bellingham. None of the players who play in the Premier League have scored for them. Is there, outside of Erling Haaland, who scored a lot of goals for Norway, is there a standout Premier League player that we're looking Salah at this World Cup? Anybody?
Pedro Porro.
Pedro Porro's been really well.
Mark Cucurella.
Jimenez.
He's.
Jimenez, yeah. Raul Jimenez had a good World Cup. But attacking wise, you're probably right.
I wonder, is that playing a factor?
Obviously, Rodri was outstanding last night. I just can't get over it. The Spanish starting defence,
Saka's had 3 assists. Trossard had 2 assists.
I don't know if you can say Saka's had a good tournament, though.
Well, he hasn't played that much.
Yeah.
Like, he's gone, he's been decent.
Madueke obviously hasn't been good. Gordon hasn't been good. Rice has
Gordon hasn't been
good. Fantastic.
The favourites are delighted with how Gordon has transformed himself.
He had one good game.
Like, I know you're biased against him, but...
What bias do I have against Anthony Gordon?
I hate him.
Just because we discovered he's over 6 foot.
Find that Saka could be statistically very good.
It's probably one of those ones that you have to retrospectively look back on and consider, is that a factor? But it could be anecdotal either.
The point you made earlier about Spain's bench and France's bench, in that on paper and last night they look stronger. It wasn't a talk going into the World Cup. It was like, look at France's bench. It was like, oh my God, the options.
Ryan Cherky.
Now, I feel like Deschamps didn't manage them very well throughout the tournament. Like, Cherky, he barely played.
There was some...
And then you're bringing
Know. I wasn't able to stack it up in the 3 minutes I went looking for it yesterday, but there was some suggestion that he'd had a falling out with players, that Cherky had had a row with. Because did you see him coming off? It was kind of a dunt from Dean. See that? I was like, Luca, you're in no situation here to be giving anybody anything other than like, I'm really sorry for everything I've done.
Please forgive me. Yeah, because Cherky came on against Senegal in the first game and wasn't great. And did he play after that? Maybe he played a couple minutes after that, but he wasn't involved.
You bring up the management by Deschamps of the team. I'm just looking back at the Norway game here. Do you remember that dead rubber group game? They won 4-1. So Norway made a raft of changes. The French starting team that night, just up front alone, like Mbappe, Dembele, Olise, Doué, and the midfield was Kone and Tchouaméni.
Yeah.
And their defence was, the two, Koundé right back, same goalkeeper, one of the centre halves.
It is a rare thing to rotate your team as much as Norway did, but maybe you could have, like, it wasn't like Norway were hiding the fact they were going to do that. Haaland literally said it. It's like, they're probably going to beat us, so we don't really care. We don't care about this game.
At the same time, though, you always try and search for answers in situations like this. So if France had beaten Spain last night, you wouldn't be obviously mentioned this Norway game, the group stages. You're just trying to find out reasons that why did they not show up at all? Like, it wasn't that they were beaten by the better side, just it was that they didn't lay a glove either. Now Spain obviously were in control of that, and we'll talk about that in the next segment, obviously, about what Spain did. But France, it's just like, perplexing. Must be totally bewildered off the ball at breakfast in France today about, like, where do you even start with this?
I think pre-tournament I had talked about their midfield. They're a body down and you're against the best midfield in the tournament. I would still have said Portuguese midfielder was, but then I pointed out on, was it this show or the betting show yesterday, that like Portugal played with essentially 10 men against them, against Spain. And I just felt like that extra body, that's important. It seems like there's the system and there's the players. And France could have had a system, but chose not to and decided to back the players, which had thrilled us up to this point. They were definitely the best team to watch. One of those games was the 4-1 against the Norwegian B side. Yeah. So, you know, we are all prisoners of the...
Yeah, but they beat Morocco 2-0 and everyone was hot in Morocco.
Yeah, and it was straightforward.
Yeah.
And they were creating chances. L'Equipe also says the fewest opportunities they've created in 60 years. And after plan A failed, there was no plan B.
I just wonder with the midfield thing, like in that game last night, I know you don't tend to just throw someone in there, but N'Golo Kante is sitting on the bench and they're getting ran around the place. They're not getting anywhere near the ball. Is he not the perfect player?
Yeah.
He might be too old now.
In that situation.
But even...
They're 2-0 down though, like... You're not just...
at that stage.
Or maybe when they're 1-0 down, you're chasing the game still.
I think if you're going to do that, you do it at the start of the game and then you can take him off. You run yourself into the ground here, even if it's for 40 minutes.
I feel like he should have been used in some capacity though. It felt like a perfect game for him to play.
Yeah.
Not saying they go and win the game, but
play,
it makes a difference.
Play
like.
Kone, Tchouaméni and Rabiot at the start.
Yeah.
And then Rabiot's not running around getting wrecked.
Yeah. And it will... That's definitely a solution, but I don't think he had any interest in that. I think
he
wanted to play the boys.
Yeah. And
if he
it must be tempting to play the boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're
so
bloody good.
Yeah, the one thing was like, I always found like, you know, it was like either Barcola or Doué.
Yeah, what?
I'm always a bit like, whatever about the two of them.
Why is Barcola starting?
He had one really good, he actually had one really good run at the start of the game.
He's no end product though.
But he went for a corner. Right at the start of the game.
No end product whatsoever.
And then after that, I was like, insipid. Whereas the other three, I do get it, like Dembele was the scoring crack. Olise, I mean, people were texting me Olise's best player in the world a couple of games ago in the Sweden game when he was the true ball after true ball in the second half.
That's stars.
Mbappe.
There's Olise's number one booster.
I mean, Olise kind of stood out last night for how bad he was on the ball. It was, he'd get easily dispossessed. He did one class thing with that dummy. See that dummy, there was a pass to him, but he didn't get on the end of it.
Down the sideline, yeah. He won a throw-in, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you kind of have to put it down to the Spanish players as well. Like, Michael Olise is not the best player in the world just because he played poor last night. Likewise with Ousmane Dembele, likewise with Kylian Mbappe. But that is the blueprint of how you shut these guys down. You need to be able to maintain a level of intensity in closing them down. The likes of like Rodri, Fabian Ruiz, Cucurella, even Pedro Porro, all of those players were on their toes. They were doubling up on them every single time they got the ball. They don't turn into bad players overnight. They were shut down by the opponent.
So they were preparing for a team who loved the ball, who were class in possession in France. They won't have to worry about that aspect for England and Argentina. So that's a different game plan they're going to need to take. I'm just trying to find ways to penetrate the Spanish side because it seems at the moment incredibly difficult.
I saw someone pointing out that up to this point, it had been a masterclass from Spain with the ball. Last night it was a masterclass from Spain without the ball, and so they'll have the ball again against whoever they're playing in the final, and they'll just revert to that kind of recycling, probing. And I do think Williams coming off the bench for a second time means that they can go wide, but Yamal and him, and I don't know, I can't see them being beaten at this stage, but it'll be good to watch.
So O'Donoghue was asking, where were Spain in my complicated rating system? I think he's referring to the OTB Breakfast Best Board.
Yes.
And returning to it, Spain were in the best category, along with France and Morocco. Forget about Morocco.
Has anybody put that side by side with the 1994 US World Cup?
Don't know.
No. Where were England and Argentina?
They're in the good
rating. They're flying
so
under,
just below,
under the radar.
It's here just below. There's actually some howlers in there, though. Brazil, Senegal, and Netherlands in the good categories.
Morocco in the best category.
I still think Morocco were favourites for the tournament if they beat France.
Morocco were massively overrated.
I think Morocco
were grand.
They're missing their best player against France.
I was just even looking at where the players play their club football. It's like there's nothing special here. Like Brahim Diaz is like a sub at Real Madrid. Their right back is class. And other than that, and they have a class young fella in midfield from Lille, 18-year-old.
The guy who Manchester City are about to spend 150 million on. I think he's an okay player.
He's good. I'm just saying the team. I'm about the team now. I'm about Morocco as a team.
Yeah.
You'd have to be a lot better than that to beat the likes of France and Spain to have one or two lads who are playing at a high level. But the rest of them, I was like, they're fine. Morocco are grand.
Yeah. There is a little bit of revisionism to it, but like, they were being tipped as I think you're almost right in putting them in the best category because how they were being talked about. But I think they're strong dark horses. That's their level.
Shall we move on to the Open Championship?
Can I just point out one thing that at the end of that, L'Équipe were saying that Deschamps was complaining about the referee afterwards. Is he actually qualified even to, manage a game of the size? And I did think the referee was abysmal, totally lost control very early on, but it is a point that is echoed in his column this morning by Darrow Shea, not about the game last night but about the game at the weekend. Jura wasn't asking for video referees, video reviews when Dublin got calls, so why now? Kerry have reached the final with the handbrake on, that's a dangerous game to play. And then he's starts by that line from Shawshank Redemption, everybody's innocent in here, says Andy Dufresne. Didn't you know that? Everybody in the GA takes a stand for fair play when it goes against them. Ger Brennan was sore after a couple of decisions went against Dublin on Sunday, and he'd every right to be. He says the square ball penalty was a penalty. Wouldn't be getting too hot about that, or the one that goes over the line. You get some of those, you don't. I didn't hear Ger call over video technology a fortnight ago when John Maher got the head taken off him for Galway against Dublin. Kerry lads are biting back.
Yeah. Nice little bit of let's throw something out here. Let's throw something out here. Get them going. Get the narrative going. Yera, we played with a handbrake on.
Oh no, he's saying that it's critical of Jack O'Connor. That bit is. That's not it. It's like they better play some football now, lads. Don't be losing this one against Mayo.
I mean, there's a little bit of the France Spain stuff with the Kerry Mayo stuff, isn't there? Everyone talking about Kerry's unstoppable players who are incredible, and they are. Before anybody says anything,
and Mayo's newfound defensive solidity.
Yeah, you drew parallels there earlier. Yeah. Hounding fellas.
Surely a little bit too early for Mayo, though. You'd think.
Should we have professional referees in Gaelic football?
Go on.
Because the refereeing standard isn't great.
Who,
if you had like 8 or 10, who would pay?
Yeah.
Well, the GAA floats on a bed of money.
Yeah,
but
they own like land all over the country, hotels,
how many
conference centres.
I'm going to add to the frustration of the players, is like that
rights
you're getting
fees,
paid.
Sponsorship.
I'm not getting paid. You're getting paid.
How many?
I'd even hate you even more now.
So they don't seem to have a problem with people in Croke Park getting paid. You know, Croke Park is a massive staff.
Yeah, but they're not playing against the admin.
In the heat of the battle, though.
They're not playing against the referee.
But they're there, though.
It's not on your side.
Well, so not being on the side thing is like, you're an amateur, you're making mistakes. You don't think any element of professionalism will be welcome, an injection into
I'd be in favour of them all getting in some way remunerated because they have to be so professional.
Okay, but just take the argument of playing the referees on their own on its merits.
So pay the referees and make them professional, right? So how does that improve it? Is it the psychological aspect of a human getting paid for something so they feel more responsibility?
No, you become professional and you spend more time at it.
So what's the difference? How can you become professional in something that hasn't been professional before? What does becoming professional mean?
It's like going from an amateur golfer to professional golfer.
But there's a professional scene. There's no professional referee GA scene. So what are you becoming professional to, if you get me? What's the difference in how you'd ref the game?
That's what
he's
saying.
You'd versus a professional.
Create that.
Your fitness levels, your time spent going around the country training other referees and clubs and county board conventions, the depth of knowledge you have doing video analysis of how players are cheating from week to week. Like, I don't really understand how spending more time at something wouldn't make you better at it.
I know, I was wondering how you spend more time at it.
How many professional referees would you need?
Don't go to work. You sit at home and you watch your videos and you talk to the other referees and you do like a 2-hour training session every day to make sure that you're as fit as these inter-county players.
Yeah, no? Maybe. I mean, they would do an awful lot of that work now.
I know, but then they have to go.
It might be marginally better. I don't really care. Like, if they get paid, fair enough. But I can just imagine a world where like this is outrageous. It's like this guy in the middle, you're getting paid for this. I'm the one who has to go.
So that, again, that's a. So I'm happy to have that conversation too. But just no to the referees.
I never said that.
How many referees would you need professionally?
You know, start with 8 and move to 16.
So let's say 8. What do you pay them a year? 80k? 70k? 60k? 50k?
Jesus.
80,000.
I don't know. Just throwing numbers at
it.
I don't know how much a professional referee should be paid in GA.
Sorry, so you're getting 80 grand a year, right, to be a ref. What are you doing are you back to club refing? Is it for the second half of the year?
Yeah, you're a full-time paid employee of the GAA, and so you'll be allocated high-profile games, and then you will actually also then be doing conferences and training, and like it's very straightforward. Like, they have full-time games development people in every county.
Yeah, I don't
know. What are they doing all year?
I pay them all. I just leave it. Don't try and improve things. No, you're getting too way too catastrophic. What I'm trying to say to you, right?
You're black or white.
This person. And then not pay that person. And then that's what you're going to eventually do. Like, it's like every other person's getting paid for whatever different reason.
Well,
and then it just breeds even more resentment.
At Croke Park on match day, the vast majority of people who are working there are all getting paid, with the exception of the 36 members of the playing staff and the two teams. Half the backroom staff are getting paid. The professionals are getting paid. The physios, the S&C. It's on and off whether or not the analysts are getting paid county by county. Some managers are getting paid. Players don't seem to have too much of a problem with that. And they've extracted some value through the GPA, I would argue, far too small a value. And so that's that one issue. You're conflating these two things. The standard of refereeing is not good enough. Do we all agree with that?
Well, I think...
And what's going to fix that?
It's like so it's the Dublin Kerry thing is like it's really brought it up again.
But the Dublin Kerry thing is just because Dublin fans are finally awake to what the rest of us feel most weeks.
The standard is not great, right? But it's also, it's ridiculously hard to referee.
I think that's the
get
thing.
Football and hurling, especially hurling. But how are you supposed to keep up and play?
Well, maybe if you're a full-time athlete.
Like the Dublin game of the weekend, that wasn't a refereeing issue. That was a...
officiating issue.
That was an umpire issue. That wasn't the referee was fine.
The ref might have had an idea that it was square ball, and there were other bits and pieces. Maybe
I think we're being very harsh. I think maybe overall,
do you pay
structure,
the umpires then?
No,
well, sorry. Definitely as not. The season goes on, and as you get down to the final few, like yeah, you have referees who are full time staff in the finals.
And their staff get paid too. So the umpires.
No, Colin, I said we'd start with eight, right? And so by the time you get to the final, you can have everybody who's paid.
Right, but you say, Enda's point is it wasn't the ref's fault, Dublin Kerry. It was behind the goals fault.
Okay, and for the semi-finals, so we'd have full-time staff, yeah. By the time you're telling... And eventually, you'd get to a point where there are 20. Yeah, every county has its own full-time referee, or two, depending on the size of it, for hurling and football. And suddenly you've got 60 referees who are full-time professional. And the standard of all the refereeing for all the county finals and club games rises immediately because people get better.
Well, something's going to need to happen as well, because the reason we're talking about this is because the quality of games and the physicality and the pace has gone up, you know, tenfold in the last like 5-10 years. So, and it's the same referees that were around 5-10 years ago. And like, we haven't really adapted in that sense. So you kind of need to do something. I don't know if it is professionalism, because then you say you start off with eight, but then there's arguments around the leagues then about who's getting refs, and some games are amateur and some are professional.
Sure, but as time goes on, everybody goes, we're on a journey here, we're starting here, we hope to get to a point where eventually there's enough to do every league game, inter-county league game, when it comes to that. And that wouldn't take too long to get to if everybody was suddenly going, geez, this game has vastly improved.
Yeah. How do you set that up?
Isn't that radical a notion?
Do you not?
No, I don't think it is.
I do agree with the idea that the refereeing standards across the board is probably not good enough. Like the floor is probably too low. But when you get to the quarterfinal, the semifinal, the final, the refereeing standards through the roof. It's brilliant. Am I wrong in saying that? Like, the top level referees in GAA are at a really high standard already.
I think if you look over the last couple of years, there's been problems with the All-Ireland semi-final last year. There was a significant scoring issue that caused Kilkenny not to go for points and to go for goals when they could have won an All-Ireland semi-final and gone through to an All-Ireland final.
Is that not a scoreboard issue?
It's the scoring is something that needs to be transmitted by everybody. Like, it's an officiating issue, I would say. And I don't agree with you. Like, even the quarter-final, Tyrone will feel sore all winter about decisions that went against them.
Yeah, they were called within the game. They were refereeing decisions.
Yeah.
I don't think there is good refs in the GAA.
I think the best refs in GAA are a high standard. As you get out of that core three, you see a drop off, which is,
why not make
I hold my hand up and say,
for people to do and to become expert at.
Yeah, potentially. This is a real breakfast buffet topic.
It is.
Shall we move on to the Open Championship? Tease off tomorrow in Royal Birkdale. So a couple of interesting things from the press conferences over the last day or two. The Irish golfers that are taking part, we've got Tom McKibben. He's the first out of the Irish golfers tomorrow morning. He tees off at 8:03 with Molinari and French amateur Lev Grinberg. Rory McIlroy is out in the afternoon. He's 3:15. He's teeing off with Xander Schauffele and Matt Fitzpatrick. And we've got Shane Lowry. He is out at 2:53. He's along with Aaron Rye and Brooks Koepka. And Padraig Harrington, who has won the Open at Royal Birkdale before in 2008, he tees off at 1:20 alongside Marco Penge and Michael Hollick of South Africa. Darren Clark is also out early in the afternoon. He's 12:47. He's also part of the Irish contingent playing at Royal Birkdale. So it's hot, it's dry in Southport. The course is playing as such. Reports that the rough is even starting to burn up now, so potential for not easy play, but easier play from rough that you would normally expect in links golf. But heat and dryness also leads to a lot of wild shots in Lynx golf as well. So there's reports that some of the players are struggling to come to grips with that at the minute. John Rahm said yesterday that his 6-iron is travelling 280 yards. And Jordan Spieth said his 5-iron is going over 300 yards. So takes a little bit of thinking. There's not going to be a lot of bombing it down the fairway in this one. And there's going to be a lot of iron play.
Yeah. Just looking there today, the 26 degrees is the top temperature, and it's 50% humidity during the day. I think it is supposed to, I don't want to use the word or the phrase cool down, but I think it's supposed to get less hot as the week goes. That's golf, though, isn't it? You adjust to the weather conditions. That's the way it goes. Nothing new here.
Yeah, I wonder, does it make it more or less likely that we're going to have a lesser starred winner, shall we say, as opposed to no mark? But we need a big, proper winner, don't we? I mean, I'm all for the Everyman Pro wins massive life-changing event, or very talented man wins second, but not particularly exciting. But we want Rory or Scheffler.
As in, golf needs a big winner.
Feels a little bit like.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, we haven't had a European winner since Shane Lowry in 2019. The last Open Championship winners were Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Brian Harman, Cameron Smith, Colin Morikawa, and then it was Shane Lowry back in 2019 was the last European winner. So you'd maybe hope that you'd get a European winner or at least a European contender in this. Whether or not that's the case or not, I think interestingly going into the press conference, I mentioned them there. We'll talk about it a little bit more in depth in the breakfast buffet. But Scottie Scheffler was asked about his legacy. And he's coming in as the defending champion, and he was basically very morbid, but saying, I don't really care about my legacy. When I'm dead, I'm not going to be here to think about it, and people can talk about it if they want. Last time that he was speaking like this was the year that he won the Open. It was just before the Open Championship last year, where he was asked about his standing in golf and where he sees himself, and he's kind of like, I don't really care. I've got more things to worry about. And that element of the relentlessness of being a professional top level athlete was sort of, it kind of felt like it was getting to him a little bit, saying like trying to get yourself up to go and win these tournaments again is a relentless thing that he cares a little bit more too much about his family and things outside of golf. And then he goes and dominates the field. So if history repeats itself, we could be seeing another Scottie Scheffler major.
Yeah, it's bad omens for everyone else. When Scottie stops caring with his words, he starts locking in internally.
Yeah. It's like he's outwardly the opposite, but he's actually locking in. I know we're going to bring it up later, but it is an interesting conversation. Like, what does legacy actually mean? Does it matter? Like, do the athletes care about it?
I mean, the All Blacks seemed to decide that retrospectively it was the most important thing they'd ever talked about.
Yeah, that's true.
That was after they won.
That's true.
And imagine if they'd lost. Imagine if those penalties had gone against them in the 2011 final. We're like, well, that was all bollocks, wasn't it?
Yeah. I suppose it is different with a team sport because, you know, the team is always there and it will continue.
But that's true.
The athlete itself
it's a fair point.
Only lasts a certain amount of time.
Yeah. But it's different in those international team sports anyway. Maybe.
Yeah. We'll do it later, though.
We will. I mentioned that Patrick Harrington won here in Birkdale in 2008. So the headline after he won it from The Guardian was Harrington blows the field away to seal double Open triumph. So he had won the previous year at Carnoustie, beating Sergio Garcia in a playoff. He won this Open. Based on that headline, without me telling you, and you just might know the answer anyway, what do you think Patrick Harrington's final score was? After he ran away from it, ran away from the field.
How many strokes did he win by?
How many strokes? Not how many strokes did he win by. What was his score in over-unders?
20 under, Enda. I'm going to say 20 under.
He was 3 over, Jer.
What?
3 over. He ran away from the opposition. But he was 3 over for a final round of 1 under. Ian Poulter finished second with 7 over. And joint third in that round of golf was Greg Norman and Henrik Stenson with 9 over.
Norman, wow.
Yeah. So that's what happened in 08 at Royal Birkdale. That's how bad Lynx golf can get.
This week's Greg Norman.
Yeah, potentially. Don't know how old Greg Norman would have been in 2008.
Surprised we don't see that more. Players just struggle. Like, someone has to win, obviously. The survival of the fittest, but like, everyone on the course just doesn't have a bad game because they're all playing the same conditions, you know? You don't really see that. Not anymore, at least.
Greg Norman was 53 back in 08.
Harrington's 55? Is he? 54?
Patrick Harrington is 54.
There you go.
So, yeah, you're not far off. Not far off there. It'd be amazing to see Harrington do something off the back of his senior win.
There is, I can only find one prediction. There's going to be a 10-under winning score. I expect them to be slightly better than they were when Harrington won. But I don't know. If the weather continues like this, I guess they can water the greens and keep the greens relatively soft and not cut the grass quite as low. Slow down the putting, make it easier for them to land on the green.
Would you rather see that? Like, would you rather see them pull yeah. the course back a little bit and
no, I'd help the golfers out? This week, like.
You want to see them hitting shots you'd never seen them hitting before, or like completely misfire.
And they would if they struggled.
That's what I mean. It's like, if the course is really hard and fast and dry and the undulating of the fairways comes into it, I'd love to see one of the top players hit their pitching wedge like 240 yards carry.
It is a funny sport.
It would be hilarious.
It's a funny sport in that, like, if you think about, you'd nearly be just as entertained to watch a bad round of golf as you would be a good round of golf. Like, if you think about a bad game of football,
yeah,
no one's enjoying that.
It'll be quite similar to the element of, do you know what we were talking about with the underdogs getting through in the World Cup? You don't want to see them getting too far. It's similar to that in golf. In the opening rounds, Thursday and Friday, you're like, okay, yeah, I'll put up with the funniness and the oddness of these players hitting bad shots. But once you get into Saturday and Sunday, you want to see actual real golf shots.
It gets to a point, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, do we have a pick for the Open this week? Is it even in people's minds when we're talking this weekend, because we've got the All-Ireland Hurling Final, the World Cup Final?
Yeah, it's tough to get up for when there's so much going on. Scotty, the way he's talking. I think everyone says Scotty every single major, but
who's the last player to retain it?
Yeah, I'm going to say Scotty.
Scotty's 11-2, McIlroy's 13-2, Tommy Fleetwood 11-1, Matt Fitzpatrick 11, John Rahm 14. So they're big enough prices. I think they don't have a clue who's going to win it.
I think the last person to retain it is
it Harrington.
It's Harrington, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I feel like this could be another fella you don't know very much about who's a 200-1 shot.
Who's the last? So Brian Harman in 2023 is closest to that category. Then he was Xander Schauffele and Scotty. Cameron Smith before that. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Top of the game before Liv. Marikawa. There was no Open in 2020.
It was COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah. So then Lowry has kept it for 2 years. So yeah, you're right. Yeah, all American and one Australian since Shane Lowry. I love the Open.
It's weirdly the hardest one of the ones to actually get to plonk yourself in front of the telly for and watch. Although it is always on, because it's on from like 7 in the morning to 7 at night.
Mm.
Which I have to say I respect.
Should we talk about Rovers?
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
5-1 win in Europe doesn't really happen no matter what stage it is.
And Floriana equalised last night too.
Yeah, yeah.
Making it more difficult. The crowd in Talbot Stadium. There was a worry about it with the France-Spain distraction. It didn't seem like it. It's only on LOI TV. Graham Burke and Jack Byrne scored delightful goals. Very different. Individual dribbling and Carter from distance.
Characteristic of their play style.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And history made there. Coming from 2 goals down. Don't think any Irish side has scored 5 goals in any European game before. The return of Pico Lopez. What a summer this guy's having.
Yeah. I imagine that played a massive factor as well in the game. And like you say, it actually looked like quite a decent crowd considering what it was clashing with France and Spain yesterday evening. But like you say, when the Floriana equalised, that game goes one of two ways there. It's like, well, it peters out as a 1-1. They may be pulling another goal back, but it's not enough. But to kick on, score four more goals.
5,500 until last night. 5,466 is the attendance. That's really good.
Thank you.
Nice weather. European game. Not sure the Shamrock Rovers fans were probably overly disappointed they were missing the France Spain last night in the World Cup.
10,500 capacity. But it would look very good on the camera angle. So it must have been the camera side that were the empty seats. It looked pretty packed. Just one more thing in the football for me. Lionel Messi, 205 Argentina caps, has never played England.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
She said 205.
Yeah. And he retired there for a while, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Stepped away.
That is insane.
So he must have played 205 breakdown. This is the same for Olivier Giroud there when he was in the BBC's coverage in group stages. It's like Olivier Giroud has like 137 France caps since 2011. It's like he must have played in every single game.
Yeah.
Well, how many games do you have a year? Yeah, like over 200. Messi never played England.
Like Giroud came off the bench in the 2024 game in the Euros between France and Spain.
Yeah,
so he's still playing.
He might have
at that
had
point,
a cheeky sub appearances. Yeah. Because minute one, minute 90 is the same. Clap boys.
And they haven't been blessed with strikers up until they got Mbappe.
Yeah. No, I think the guy warrants it. It's more like just as how you break that down. Sorry, 137 Ben. Caps in that length of time is you must have been available constantly.
Benzema as well. Sorry, of course, forgot about him.
Also unavailable for various reasons. Rovers have Ararat Armenia next week in the second qualifying leg. They're in with a chance of that. And then suddenly the prizes get real.
I know. Yeah, Jesus, definitely. I'm amazed of Stephen Bradley's. I know we have to go. His repeated motivation to keep going year after year. I was thinking that Lincoln job in the UK. I was thought he'd go further. I know he had his reasons for staying and all that. It's kind of like Stephen Bradley for me is like the Irish Pep Guardiola, in that every year I think it'll be his last year.
Yeah.
I thought that for 5 years of Pep until it was.
I think they were to start qualifying for
That's why he's staying. Partly the reason why he's staying. I know he's personal stuff going on as well, but like I think this is a great job now. he's turned it into something where,
you know, when he was talking about Pico, if Pico was 10 years younger, he'd be worth 10 million.
Yeah.
If they were to start qualifying for Europa Leagues, their players will start to be worth 10 million. European experience, 10 games in a season, 15 games. You do it. Say you put a 17-year-old in the team and he plays three seasons and the third season starts to star in a Europa League campaign. Like, that's suddenly the value of players.
They had that Conference League group stage. Was that the year before last? The one where they went to Chelsea? When you say that, you mean they need to compete?
Yeah, they need to start like doing something. And if you're the person who's involved in creating that legacy for Irish football, that's a big job.
It's huge, yeah. I do worry.
And after that, you get the Ireland job.
That the rest of the world would just look at that team like, oh, that was good for them to qualify, but obviously they're not up the level. So they would need to.
Well, the data will tell you whether they're up the level. The data tells you, like, aggressive dribbles, all that kind of stuff.
I look, they're all got to move to Arsenal, like, obviously. Mason was picked up. Definitely.
But what they would need to stay
and
have successful campaigns. And that's not it's totally within the range of outcomes.
Yeah.
Paddy Bonner was calling for Celtic to purchase a League of Ireland club as a feeder club for them. Obviously, there's the link between Dermot Desmond and Shamrock Rovers as well as Celtic. So, look, I don't think that's the way forward. I think they need to make a legacy of their own. And they do that. But this is what the Europa Conference League can do, though, because like it is supposed to be a system where anybody theoretically can get into it. And with the payments that you get with UEFA, you can then build on that. And then you build on that. And suddenly you're a Conference League team or a Europa League team. So, if you're winning the League of Ireland, it is the easiest possible way to make and build a club that can compete at European level, because you win the League of Ireland, you're in the Conference League, you get to the Conference League, you get the money, you spend the money, you win the league, you get there again, and you continue to dominate. Like, there is potential here that Shamrock Rovers could go on to win and dominate the League of Ireland for decades.
Yeah, nobody thinks that's right.
Right.
You know.
I don't agree with that, but that's what the system creates.